Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Chapter 7, Text 15. Namaṁ duṣkṛtino mūrha prapadyante narādhamāha Māyaya pahrita jñāna āsuraṁ bhāvam āśritāha. Translation. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. Me is Krishna speaking. Purport. It is said in Bhagavad Gita that simply by surrendering oneself unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality Krishna, one can surmount the stringent laws of material nature. At this point, a question arises. How is it that educated philosophers, scientists, businessmen, administrators, and all the leaders of ordinary men do not surrender to the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, the all-powerful personality of Godhead? Mukti, or liberation from the laws of material nature, is sought by the leaders of mankind in different ways and with great plans and perseverance for a great many years and births. But if that liberation is possible by simply surrendering unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then why don't these intelligent and hard-working leaders adopt this simple method? The Gita answers this question very frankly. Those really learned leaders of society like Brahma, Shiva, Kapila, the Kumaras, Manu, Vyas, Devala, Asita, Janaka, Prahlad, Bali, and later on Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Sri Chaitanya, and many others, who are faithful philosophers, politicians, educators, scientists, etc., surrender to the lotus feet of the Supreme Person, the all-powerful authority. Those who are not actually philosophers, scientists, educators, administrators, etc., but who pose themselves as such for material gain, do not accept the plan or path of the Supreme Lord. They have no idea of God. They simply manufacture their own worldly plans and consequently complicate the problems of material existence in their vain attempts to solve them. Because material energy, nature, is so powerful, it can resist the unauthorized plans of the atheists and baffle the knowledge of planning commissions. The atheistic plan makers are described herein by the word duṣkṛtinā, or miscreants. Kṛti means, I'll just have a look back there. Yeah. Kṛti means one who has performed meritorious work. The atheist plan maker is sometimes very intelligent and meritorious also, because any gigantic plan, good or bad, must take intelligence to execute. But because the atheist's brain is improperly utilized in opposing the plan of the Supreme Lord, the atheist plan maker is called duṣkṛti, which indicates that his intelligence and efforts are misdirected. In the Gita, it is clearly mentioned that material energy works fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. It has no independent authority. It works as the shadow moves in accordance with the movements of the object. But still, material energy is very powerful, and the atheist, due to his godless temperament, cannot know how it works, nor can he know the plan of the Supreme Lord. Under illusion and the modes of passion and ignorance, all his plans are baffled, as in the case of Hiranyakashipu and Ravana, whose plans were smashed to dust, although they were both materially learned as scientists, philosophers, administrators, and educators. These Dushkritinas, or miscreants, are of four different patterns as outlined below. 1. The Mudhas are those who are grossly foolish, like hard-working beasts of burden. They want to enjoy the fruits of their labor by themselves, and so they do not want to part with them for the Supreme. The typical example of the beast of burden is the ass. This humble beast is made to work very hard by his master. The ass does not really know for whom he works so hard day and night. He remains satisfied by filling his stomach with a bundle of grass, sleeping for a while under fear of being beaten by his master, and satisfying his sex appetite at the risk of being repeatedly kicked by the opposite party. The ass sings poetry and philosophy sometimes, but this braying sound only disturbs others. This is the position of the foolish fruitive worker who does not know for whom he should work. He does not know that karma, action, is meant for yajna, sacrifice. Most often, those who work very hard day and night to clear the burden of self-created duties say that they have no time to hear of the immortality of the living being. To such murhas, material gains which are destructible are life's all in all, despite the fact that the murhas enjoy only a very small fraction of the fruit of labor. Sometimes they spend sleepless days and nights for fruitive gain, and although they may have ulcers or indigestion, they are satisfied with practically no food. They are simply absorbed in working hard day and night for the benefit of illusory masters. I could suggest you just move in a bit. It's not so proper to sit with our back directly to Srila Prabhupada. Ignorant of their real master, the foolish workers waste their valuable time serving mammon. Unfortunately, they never surrender to the Supreme Master of all masters, nor do they take time to hear of him from the proper sources. The swine who eat the night soil do not care to accept sweetmeats made of sugar and ghee. Similarly, the foolish worker will untiringly continue to hear of the sense-enjoyable tidings of the flickering mundane world, but will have very little time to hear about the eternal living force that moves the material world. 2. Another class of Dushkriti, or miscreant, is called the Naradhama, or the lowest of mankind. Nara means human being, and Adhama means the lowest. Out of the 8,400,000 different species of living beings, there are 400,000 human species. Out of these, there are numerous lower forms of human life that are mostly uncivilized. The civilized human beings are those who have regulative principles of social, political, and religious life. Those who are socially and politically developed, but who have no religious principles, must be considered Naradhamas. Nor is religion without God religion, because the purpose of following religious principles is to know the Supreme Truth and man's relation with him. In the Gita, the personality of Godhead clearly states that there is no authority above him and that he is the Supreme Truth. The civilized form of human life is meant for man's reviving the lost consciousness of his eternal relation with the Supreme Truth, the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, who is all-powerful. Whoever loses this chance is classified as a Naradhama. We get information from revealed scriptures that when the baby is in the mother's womb, an extremely uncomfortable situation, he prays to God for deliverance and promises to worship him alone as soon as he gets out. To pray to God when he is in difficulty is a natural instinct in every living being because he is eternally related with God. But after his deliverance, the child forgets the difficulties of birth and forgets his deliverer also being influenced by Maya, the illusory energy. It is the duty of the guardians of children to revive the divine consciousness dormant in them. The 10 processes of reformatory ceremonies as enjoined in the Manu Smriti, which is the guide to religious principles, are meant for reviving God consciousness in the system of Varnashram. However, no process is strictly followed now in any part of the world, and therefore 99.9% of the population is Naradhamma. Naradhamma. When the whole population becomes Naradhamma, naturally all their so-called education is made null and void by the all-powerful energy of physical nature. According to the standard of the Gita, a learned man is he who sees on equal terms the learned Brahmana, the dog, the cow, the elephant, and the dog-eater. That is the vision of a true devotee. Sri Nityananda Prabhu, who is the incarnation of Godhead as Divine Master, delivered the typical Naradhamas, the brothers Jagai and Madhai, and showed how the mercy of a real devotee is bestowed upon the lowest of mankind. So, the Naradhamma, who is condemned by the personality of Godhead, can again revive his spiritual consciousness only by the mercy of a devotee. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in propagating the Bhagavata Dharma, or activities of the devotees, has recommended that people submissively hear the message of the personality of Godhead. The essence of this message is Bhagavad Gita. The lowest among human beings can be delivered by this submissive hearing process only, but unfortunately they even refuse to give an oral reception to these messages, and what to speak of surrendering to the will of the Supreme Lord. Naradhamas, or the lowest of mankind, will fully neglect the prime duty of the human being. 3. The next class of Dushkriti is called Mayayapahritajnana, or those persons whose erudite knowledge has been nullified by the influence of illusory material energy. They are mostly very learned fellows, great philosophers, poets, literati, scientists, etc. But the illusory energy misguides them, and therefore they disobey the Supreme Lord. There are a great number of Mayayapahritajnana at the present moment, even amongst the scholars of the Bhagavad Gita. In the Gita, in plain and simple language, it is stated that Sri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is none equal to or greater than Him. He is mentioned as the father of Brahma, the original father of all human beings. In fact, Sri Krishna is said to be not only the father of Brahma, but also the father of all species of life. He is the root of the impersonal Brahman and Paramatma. The supersoul in every living entity is His plenary portion. He is the fountainhead of everything, and everyone is advised to surrender unto His lotus feet. Despite all these clear statements, the Mayayapahritajnana deride the personality of the Supreme Lord and consider Him merely another human being. They do not know that the blessed form of human life is designed after the eternal and transcendental feature of the Supreme Lord. All the unauthorized interpretations of the Gita by the class of Mayayapahritajnana outside the purview of the Parampara system are so many stumbling blocks on the path of spiritual understanding. The deluded interpreters do not surrender unto the lotus feet of Sri Krishna, nor do they teach others to follow this principle. 4. The last class of Dushkriti is called Asurang Bhavam Ashritaha, or those of demonic principles. This class is openly atheistic. Some of them argue that the Supreme Lord can never descend upon this material world, but they are unable to give any tangible reasons as to why not. There are others who make Him subordinate to the impersonal feature, although the opposite is declared in the Gita. Envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the atheist will present a number of illicit incarnations manufactured in the factory of his brain. Such persons, whose very principle of life is to decry the personality of Godhead, cannot surrender unto the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. Sri Yamunacharya Albandaru of South India said, "O my Lord, you are unknowable to persons involved with atheistic principles, despite your uncommon qualities, features, and activities." Despite your personalities being confirmed by all the revealed scriptures in the quality of goodness, and despite your being acknowledged by the famous authorities renowned for their depth of knowledge in the transcendental science and situated in the godly qualities. Therefore, 1. Grossly foolish persons, 2. The lowest of mankind, 3. The deluded speculators, and 4. The professed atheists, as above mentioned, never surrender unto the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, in spite of all scriptural and authoritative advice. Namang duskritino murhaf prapadyante naradhamaha mayaya pahrita jnana asurang bhavamashritaha. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. I was asked to speak this evening on the subject of speaking strongly. No doubt because the last book I published was called On Speaking Strongly in Srila Prabhupada's Service. Therefore, I decided to speak on this verse, which Srila Prabhupada said is a very important verse. He personally quoted it many times, and it's Hare Krishna. There's quite a long purport has been given here by Srila Prabhupada, one of the longest purports that he's given in this Bhagavad Gita as it is. So from one verse we have an expanded explanation, and if we are to comment on that, then it will expand more and more. So I won't attempt to go over all the points that Srila Prabhupada has given here. But it is important to understand that in the cultivation of bhakti, or pure devotional service to Krishna, we have to be aware what is bhakti and also what is not bhakti, or what is abhakti, non-devotional service. And that the preaching of Krishna consciousness can be broadly grouped into two divisions, as is described about Sri Nityananda Prabhu, who is mentioned herein in this purport. Prem Pracharan or Pashanda Dalan Dui Kaj Avadhut Karin Brahman. It is said in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that Sri Nityananda Prabhu, he wandered here and there, he travelled here and there for two purposes. One was to preach about prem. Prem means pure love of Krishna. And the other purpose was Pashanda Dalan, or subdue. Srila Prabhupada translates that as subduing the atheists. Because it's atheists create an atmosphere in the world which makes people disinclined even to hear or think about surrendering to Krishna, as is quite prominent at the present time with an attack of atheists on theism in general. There is at the present time, in the last few years, there's been an orchestrated attack of maya pahrita jnana asuram bhavam ashritaha. Means people who are apparently learned but actually not properly intelligent at all, and persons who have deliberately taken up the preaching of atheism, or as one of them who died said, he would not like to be described as an atheist, but he called himself an anti-theist. So that is going on, so there's a need to understand what is the nature of these people. And also particularly because we live in Kali Yuga, the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, wherein atheism in its various manifestations is prominent. There's atheism, agnosticism, anti-theism, and apathy. People are just, they're not interested this way, that way, or the other. Just like myself, if I look back to my childhood at school, although I went to a school which was nominally a Catholic school, but there was no discussion ever among the children attending the school about anything to do with religion or God. It was just not on the agenda at all. It was just not a subject of any interest whatsoever. We just never even thought about it, except we had to attend some religious assembly in the school every morning, which I, the hundreds of hours put together of myself sitting through that, and I can't remember one single word of anything that was said. So, we can try to go through the purport here and discuss some of the points about these four classes of duṣkṛtīs. Duṣkṛti, kṛti means they've done something. And duṣkṛti means they're doing something bad. So they're doing something. Do something. They're, this modern society is based on the idea you have to do something. You have to build a building or kick a ball. This Manchester is famous for Manchester United. Kicking a ball. The great achievement of kicking, being able to kick a ball better than other people, for which magnificent activity you can earn lots more than other people. But this is all called duṣkarma, or nonsensical activity. Now, Srila Prabhupada, he opens this purport with a tongue-in-cheek statement, in a roundabout way, in a somewhat humorous way. He presents a possible question that could arise here. He states that in the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated by Krishna, that simply by surrendering to Krishna, one can become, or Srila Prabhupada writes here, one can surmount the stringent laws of material nature. That's the ultimate teaching of Bhagavad Gita, Charam Shlok, as it's called in the Sri Ramanuj Sampradaya, the ultimate teaching, which is Sarva Dhaman Parityaja, Mamekam Sharanam Raja, Aham tva sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami mashucha. Krishna says, giving up all ideas of religion, of dharma, fully take shelter in me only. And by doing so, then I will reciprocate. I will deliver you from all sinful reactions. And to underline that he's quite capable of doing so, and indeed will do so, he says, Ma Shucha, don't have any doubt or any worries about this. So it's a great deal. Everyone's looking for a bargain. So this is your best bargain. This is better than 10% off or buy two, get one free or any such bargain. His bargain is that all the nonsense activities that we've done for millions of lifetimes, all the millions of lifetimes we've been duṣkṛtīs, performers of wrong activities. We've been mūrha, narādhva, māyāparita-jñāna, āsaraṁ bhāvam-āśrita. We've been, life after life, we have been fools, lowest of mankind, false intellectuals, and out-and-out rascals. Of course, this is possible in the human form of life to attain such a title as Duskriti Murha. In the animal form of life, we're just living off our reactions, as Srila Prabhupada mentions here about the donkey. The donkey is a great poet. You don't get many four-legged donkeys in Manchester, I suppose. Probably plenty of two-legged ones, but not many four-legged ones. But they also have their poetry. At least to them it must sound like poetry, because they announce it very loudly. Have you heard the donkeys in Anand? There are so many donkeys wandering around the streets. So they start off very loud, and then they gradually become quiet, and they find no one's listening, no one's interested. Then after some time they get some inspiration, and they again call out their poetry, and it goes on like this. So in the animal form of life, they can't be described as being dushkriti, or performing bad activities. They're just getting the results of that. All right, that's cell phone. That's dushkarma. Please turn off your cell phone. Don't be a dushkriti. Turn off your cell phone and forget about it for the time being. So, how many millions and trillions and quadrillions and zillions of lifetimes have we been performing bad activities? And Krishna says, okay, here's the deal. Just surrender to me. And try again. No, Krishna says, just surrender to me once. Just surrender to me once. And I will deliver you from all sinful reactions. So it's a great deal. Some people might even protest. No, in our religion, we give those people what? If they don't do what we say, we throw them in hell forever without any chance of any redemption. So your process is too lenient, letting them off. Let them burn in hell. But Krishna says, I will deliver you. You just surrender to, just to take shelter in me, that's all. So Srila Prabhupada poses the question that there are many leaders of mankind who are very concerned with the welfare of the population, and therefore they make speeches telling people that you just vote for me and I will do everything good for you, and we will deliver the United Kingdom from all its problems, which may require bombing some people in another part of the world, but it's all for the benefit of the British people. We will deliver you. We will help you. They're very concerned, and there may be others who are very concerned with various charitable activities, such as propagating knowledge of how to use condoms so that people don't get AIDS when they engage in illicit sexual activities. And in various ways, people are trying to help others. So, despite their heroic activities to help others, still, people are involved in birth, death, old age, and disease. Despite all the welfare organizations, despite all the very sincere politicians who are very concerned, who with every moment, all they think of is the welfare of the citizens, and they're all their hearts are bleeding with how we can benefit all the citizens. So despite all these attempts on the behalf of these people, still people have to suffer. Still, it rains too much in Manchester most of the time, but I heard it was a good summer. But can't hope for too many of them. And still the radiation from the collapsed nuclear power plant in Japan is polluting the whole world, although they don't tell us that, because they want us to rest peacefully at night, and they want to build more nuclear power stations. Still the laws of material nature, they pound us incessantly. And despite all the great intentions and all the great activities of these great people, still we have to suffer birth, death, old age and disease as an appetizer. That's only the basic. I mean, there's also many other many other forms of suffering in this world. And Krishna says, we can be free from all of these if we simply take shelter in Him. And the process of taking shelter in Him is also not very difficult. Especially in this Kali Yuga, simply by chanting the names of Krishna, Mukta Sangha Parang Rajit, one can be freed from all the bad qualities of Kali Yuga. Kale Dosha Nidhe Rajan Asti Eko Mahan Guna Kirtanad Eva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Parang Rajit. This age of Kali is an ocean of faults. Don't expect it to be good. If we find anything good in Kali Yuga, we should be surprised, because its natural, its basic characteristic is that it's an ocean of faults. But there is one great quality that by chanting the names and qualities of Krishna, then one can get freed from all material entanglement, and not only that, one can go to the supreme abode of Krishna in the spiritual sky. Then Srila Prabhupada, he poses this question, why don't these intelligent and hard-working leaders adopt this process? It's such a complete solution. It's easy. So these people are very intelligent. They're very well-intentioned. So why don't they do it? Why do they keep on making more and more plans which just get us in more and more trouble? That's the actual result of their plans. So Srila Prabhupada, he continues, the Gita answers this question very frankly. And that those, he states that those who are really the learned leaders of society, and he gives the names of the 12 Mahajans who are listed in, some of the Mahajans who are listed in Srimad Bhagavatam, plus the personalities who are listed here in the Bhagavad Gita as great spiritual authorities, Vyasa, Devala, Asita, and then later great Acharyas, Madhva Acharya, Ramanuja Acharya, Sri Chaitanya, who took the role of an Acharya. They do surrender to Krishna. They are the actual philosophers and leaders of society. But those who do not surrender to Krishna, even though they are known as philosophers, scientists, educators, administrators, etc., they do not surrender to Krishna. Why? Srila Prabhupada says, because they are not actually philosophers, scientists, educators, administrators, but they pose themselves as such for material gain. In other words, the great philosophers, philanthropists, politicians, and others who present themselves as great friends of mankind, who are doing everything for the benefit of mankind, actually they're just doing it for their own material gain. That may be in terms of monetary profit, it may be in terms of prestige, it may be because they want to be known as a saint, It's also one kind of cheating. So then they do not accept the plan or the path of the Supreme Lord. They have their own ideas. They have no idea of God. Even some of them, they might pose themselves as religious people. Some very famous religious people in the world, they're known as being, well, I'm thinking of one in particular, he's known to be promote peace, but he eats meat every day. He's coming from a religious tradition in which it is stated, ahimsa paramo dharma, non-violence is the highest religion, but he himself eats meat every day. This is called hypocrisy. There much of what goes on in the name of religion, philanthropy, philosophy, and all high-sounding words, it's simply hypocrisy. And because people are hypocrites, they either don't care, or they don't mind, or they may protest. More and more people are waking up to the fact that politicians are cheating them, the doctors and the pharmaceutical companies are cheating them. That's more apparent in America, where they don't have a national health service. But here people know the pharmaceutical industry is cheating them, and in America the medical companies. So they people are becoming upset about this hypocrisy, but they have no real plan or understanding of how to make a well-guided society. They simply want to pull down these hypocrites and put in some other form of hypocrisy. They don't want to surrender to Krishna. So 99.9% of the population, Srila Prabhupada says, they are all Naradhama, the lowest of mankind. They have their planning commissions. But for all they plan and scheme, they all have to suffer birth, death, old age and disease. They're not inclined to surrender to Krishna. They may be very intelligent, because, as Srila Prabhupada points out, even to perform some non-beneficial activity requires some intelligence. And they actually get some jobs done. They do some. They have massive undertakings. They have big telescopes and social organization. We see here in England, people who live here and in much of the world, what is called the developed world, people take it for granted that they have hot and cold water supplied to their house. Gas, do you get gas supplied to your house? You can get that, yeah. What, electricity, 24 hours. You're shopping, you can sit in your house, you never have to go shopping. So there are so many facilities which have been provided for the citizens. And there are parks and gardens. So in many ways there are many facilities for the citizens. But there's no understanding of the purpose of life, that we are not meant for material life. We're not meant for simply living in this world comfortably. And however many facilities you have, material facilities, still we have to suffer in this world. There's no philosophical inquiry to what is the purpose of life. Who are we? There may be some philosophers, but they're not real philosophers. They're not really serious about what is the purpose of life. There are many people like yourselves, I would presume. The fact that you've come here suggests that you're actually much more serious about philosophy than any professional philosophers in the university who are just interested in various abstract absurdities, whereas real philosophy means to understand or to inquire. Atato brahma jignasa. Now, having attained the human form of life, we should inquire into the nature of spiritual reality. Parabhavastava dabodhajata yavanna jignasata atmatattvam. As long as one does not inquire into atmatattva, the nature of the self. Who am I? I'm not the body. The body is temporary. Who am I? What is the nature of the living being? Why are we suffering in this world? Who is God? What is my relationship with Him? As long as we do not inquire into this, all our activities are defeated. Despite our water supply, electricity supply, so many facilities are there, but it simply facilitates our ignorant living, that we're living and we're hurtling toward death, and we never think to ask why. Why are we here? Why are we suffering? However much material facilities are there, still we have to suffer. So this material energy is very powerful and deludes us in this way. Deludes us so much that we're not even aware that we're deluded. We accept as an intrinsic fact, without even thinking about it, we accept it that, well, this is me, this body is me. In the same way that an animal thinks, of course an animal doesn't go through any philosophical process. The animal just accepts that this body is me. But most humans never go through any philosophical process either. In the same way as the animals, they just presume this body is me. And my self-interest is the self-interest of this body, and maybe the mind also. There's also the titillation of the mind in terms of various forms of entertainment. So, this material energy is so powerful that we don't even know that we are captured by it. This material situation is like being in a prison, but this prison is such that we don't even realize that we're in a prison. But actually we are. We're in a situation where we are being punished. We want to be happy, but we can't be happy. We have to struggle. As Srila Prabhupada commented, especially this modern civilization, the present civilization, its main characteristic is everyone has to engage in constant hard work, simply working, without any real gain. So all the plans are baffled. Whatever plans we have, what are your plans? We ask people, what's your plan? We ask the students in the university, well, I'll get a degree, then I'll get a job, and then do some job, and then what next? And then retire, and then die? But what? The plans to live happily, various plans. But we see the examples are given in Shastra of Hiranyakashipu, Ravana. They were really Dushkriti. They weren't little Dushkriti. They were great demons. As Prahlad, one of the sons of Hiranyakashipu, addressed him as Asuravarya, the best of the demons. They were really outstanding demons. They were far, in terms of their dushkarma, which made them dushkriti, they were far, far more accomplished than anyone in the modern age. But all their plans were smashed. And similarly, we see in the recent history, the most ambitious Dushkriti, or someone who wanted to do bad work, the most ambitious in the 20th century, that accolade should probably go to Herr Adolf Hitler. He was very active, very ambitious, very successful for something. Then he was smashed. So we may think, well, Stalin and Hitler and Roosevelt, they were successful, but no, they all had to die also. So someone is successful, someone loses, but in the modern people in the present time, either in England or Germany who are born now, they don't know, they don't care, it seems to have no influence on them whatsoever. For all these great personalities of just a short time ago, they're practically they're forgotten, and people now are much more interested in the Manchester United football stars than they are in Churchill or whatever. I guess there might be some Manchester City fans around also, but they're not as famous as Manchester United. Sorry, I'm just making a neutral statement here. I really don't know that much about Manchester United or Manchester City, except that they exist. So, the four kinds of Dushkritis, bad workers. Number one type, Murha. This is a common word which we find Krishna uses several times in Bhagavad Gita. Ahankara vimurhatma. He says, Prakriti kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasaha hankara vimurhatma kartahamiti manyate. For instance, this is several times in Gita he uses this term. He uses this term for persons who, although they are largely controlled by the material energy, they think, I'm in control. So such persons are called murha, or specifically in this verse, vimurha, which means not just a great fool, but a very great fool. Vi, in this instance, it intensifies. Vimurha. So it's a commonly used term. And I have heard it used it's not commonly used, but I have heard it used in modern spoken Bengali also. So it's not a dead term. Specifically in this context, murha means persons who are like asses, in as much as they work hard, they're dushkriti, means they're working. Kriti means that they've done something. So they're working, but they want to take the credit for themselves. They are dedicated to work. They think, yeah, I'm working, that's great. That's all in all. At one prominent college in India, the IIT, Indian Institute of Technology, had its branch in Chennai. They have a motto on the entrance that, what is that? Karmaja. Siddhim bhavati karmaja. Taken from Bhagavad Gita. Siddhim bhavati karmaja. That perfection or achievement comes from work. So they take that out of context, just the one line, and they want to say that, you see, this is very spiritual. They want to do their work and consider, oh, it's very spiritual, very elevated. In India also, it used to be, not so much now, because people are becoming more and more secular, as they call it. Many people used to describe themselves as karma yogis. And they would think that karma yogi means you get up in the morning and you say Jai Jagadisha Hare while you wave around one incense. And then you work hard all day and you earn some money. But this is just karma, it's not karma yoga. Just to work does not make one a yogi. Karma yogi means he's specifically acting for the pleasure of Krishna. Mat karma krin, mat paramo, mat bhakta sangavarjitaha, nirvaira sarvabhuteshu. This is the description Krishna gives of someone who works specifically for the pleasure of Krishna, knowing Krishna to be supreme, giving up all association with the material world, associating with devotees. So, to attempt to spiritualize one's material activities while working like an ass for no greater gain than simply to maintain one's family, this might, in the minds of some people, this might seem to be very spiritual, but it's not. Another example of this, from the Indian context, is the misleading statement. Very misleading statement that Manava Seva is Madhava Seva. Madhava means Krishna. Seva means service. Manava means man or mankind. So the idea that by serving mankind in terms of providing food, shelter, clothing, medical aid, education, educating people so they can also be asses. This is the same as serving Krishna. This is Murha philosophy. The philosophy of the asses, ass-like people. Manava Seva is not rejected, but it cannot be said to be the same as Madhava Seva. Manavas, actually, if we think that we can help others, then just by thinking like that, then we become murha, because prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sab. I am helping others. I am in a superior position, and I can help others. So this idea of helping mankind by providing them with material needs, that is not at all on the same platform as Madhava Seva, which is enacted from the platform of understanding that I am inferior to Madhava and I require to serve him for my own well-being. It's a completely different attitude. And by saying that Manava Seva is Madhava Seva, these murhas, dushkritis, rascals, they want to propose, well, then there's no need for building churches and temples and actually worshipping Madhava in the prescribed way according to Shastra, that we shall just feed the poor and understand that God is manifested as the poor man, which is another insidious idea, that God has become a poor man. God is not a poor man. And then we think that I'm feeding the poor man and therefore I'm serving God. And this way we think ourselves superior to God, that God is in requires my service. So there are very many very bad ideas which people, due to not thinking very deeply about anything, they accept as being factual. And in this way their life is spoiled. So we should be careful of the poets and philosophers who are like asses, who make a braying sound, and the ultimate result is nothing, or worse, the ass simply disturbs others. But among the asses, they think, oh, this is very, very good poetry. Oh, that's real fast. Give them a Nobel Prize for that. They have their own standard. All foolishness. So Srila Prabhupada, here in his Bhagavad Gita purport, and repeatedly, he instructs us so that we won't be misled by this cheating. It's all around us. We're born in an atmosphere, abodha jata. We're born in an atmosphere in which we're not informed. We're not given the knowledge that we require to understand Krishna. We're not told about these things. No one ever tells us. We go to school. Just like no one ever told this young boy who came in here to bow down to Srila Prabhupada when he came in the temple. Children should be taught this. So, now he did so. Very good. That's for your eternal benefit. But no one tells. We're just presumed that we get born and then we go to school and then we get a job and no one ever tells us. Or they know, well, what happens after death and we have to suffer birth, death, old age. No one ever tells you. They force you to go to school for a minimum of how many? 11 years. And they never teach you all these things. So they teach you all kinds of other things which fills our consciousness with the idea that this life is all in all, just work. You have to stay till you're 18. 13 years. And they say it's for the benefit of the people because they're so convinced that they're right. But they never even ask about these things. So, people, they're trained in such a bad way that they have no interest in these topics. At the football stadiums, they have thousands and thousands of people paying. And in the Krishna temple, we go out and some, please come free and we'll give you nice free food also. And still, hardly anyone will come. They say, why? Well, I don't want to go to Hare Krishna temple for it. It's a football game is on. These people, they don't understand what the important things in life. So foolish, so foolish. But they take it to be something very intelligent. And actually, they, just like this in internet, to develop the internet no doubt requires much intelligence and much organization. But what are they doing with it? Just wasting their time, that's all. So, going through this quickly, because would take more time to go through it word by word, line by line. But anyway, if you want a full exhibition of all these principles, just look all around. It's just a description of the world. So another class of Dushkriti or miscreant is called the Naradhama, lowest of mankind. There are 8,400,000 species of life, among which there are 400,000 species. Most of these many of the lower forms of human life are uncivilized. So we think that civilized means to have electricity, hot and cold, running water, TV, all these things. Although actually in Vedic civilization it's considered most uncivilized to poop indoors and then recycle the water and use the same water for cooking. That's not civilized. Civilized means you should go some distance away and let out
your yesterday's meal, what's left of it. So there are different standards of civilization. But Srila Prabhupada gives here a somewhat more conventional definition of civilization, that there are regulated principles, there are laws, and there are moral codes for social, political, and religious life. But he says that those who are socially and politically developed but have no religious principles must be considered naradham, as lowest among mankind. That's what's being propagated at the present time. Humanism, we should have well-organized society in which people deal with each other very nicely, but no God. This talk of God, it's unnecessary. It simply misleads people. That's what the humanists say. And Srila Prabhupada quotes here, nor is religion without God religion. This Buddhism, they have no conception of God in the original Buddhism. So, real religion is to know the Supreme Truth and man's relation with Him. And the Supreme Truth is Krishna. So without that, without in human civilization, for all the organization and development, without the point of understanding that human life is meant for God realization, then again, parabhavastavadabodhajata yavanna jignyasata atmatapam. It's all simply useless. Whether one is a beggar in the street or one is a leader of mankind, one simply lives, dies, and then where he's going, he doesn't know. His life is spoiled. He may have been a big leader, but what is the use? What is the actual benefit? One is still caught in the cycle of birth and death. So, human life is meant for this. We should ask the question, who am I? I'm in a situation wherein I am forced to suffer. I don't know why. Can I find out? Can I get free from this situation? That is actual intelligence. But the schools and colleges, they don't develop our real intelligence. They develop our intelligence in an illusory way. They develop the intelligence that how we can manipulate the material energy based on the misunderstanding that we are meant to exploit and enjoy the material energy. So it's not really intelligent at all. It's all foolishness and ignorance. So, therefore, Srila Prabhupada writes here, very important instruction for parents. Many of you present here are parents. It is the duty of the guardians of children to revive the divine consciousness dormant in them. Divine consciousness is dormant in everyone. That means Krishna consciousness. So, there's a process for doing that. One is supposed to teach the children both philosophically, not just stories. Children should not just be told stories about Krishna. And nowadays we have Krishna cartoons. But that's not Krishna. But they should be taught also Kaumarang. What is that? Kaumaram acharet pragyo dharman bhagavataniha. Durlabhang manusham janma tadapya dhruvam arthadam. Prahlad, who was himself in the Kumar age, the very young age, he said that this knowledge of Bhagavad Dharma, this should be taught from the very beginning of life, because human life It's meant for this. It's very short. There's not much time. And it can end at any time. Therefore, from the very beginning of life, this knowledge of Krishna consciousness should be taught. They should be taught from the beginning. All these things. Come in the temple. Bow down before Srila Prabhupada. Bow down before the deities. And take only Krishna prasadam. Don't take anything else. And understand that this human life is very short and very valuable. If we don't utilize it properly, we have to get born again and again and again. We have to surrender to Krishna. We're not the body. This should be taught from the very beginning of life. But no such process is followed now in any part of the world, Srila Prabhupada writes, that means including India, where previously that culture was strong there, but it's not there in India either. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada writes, 99% of the population is Naradava. Narada means the lowest among mankind. So if we say that 99%, 99.9% is lowest among mankind, how can they all be the lowest? Well, we can understand that previously, in other ages, not everyone was so in such a bad condition. But those who were the lowest sector of society previously, that level has become the normal level. So in this way we can understand this. If everyone's fallen and a rascal and a fool, we can say, well, some are better than others. But still, it's like, say, in the prison. All people are in prison for murder, rape, and white-collar crimes, and so many different offenses. And you say, well, this prisoner, he's actually a very good prisoner. What does that mean, he's a good prisoner? You have to be bad to be in there in the first place. But he's actually a very good prisoner. He doesn't get into many fights. And he's not known. He only takes mild drugs in the prison, not hard drugs. There's all drug rings going on in all the prisons, we're told. That means that the guards, they're also just as rascal as the prisoners. Bad association, is it? Yeah. And then they have women guards in the male prisons, and then the women guards are getting pregnant by the prisoners, and all kinds of crazy things. So, if all the population is so fallen, which Srila Prabhupada is analyzing here, then all their so-called education, what's the use? In the prison there may be very good education. See, when you get out, we can make this mafia and you can learn. If you're only a novice criminal, then when you go to prison you mix with all the experts, and the experienced ones, and then you learn how to become a first-class criminal. So, duskriti, maya aparita jnana, those who are very learned and educated, but their actual knowledge is taken away by illusion. Srila Prabhupada was very concerned to preach Krishna consciousness among the educated class, as he called it, because he thought that, well, it's a fact that these people, they're misleading others. People tend to take them very seriously. So there are many educated people, but they have no knowledge of the actual purpose of life. And therefore, they're Biddha kule ki koribeta. How will their knowledge and so-called higher birth, how will that help them? Their so-called knowledge serves as a detriment to them. This Maya, the power of illusion, is amazing. That people are very intelligent and they become convinced of things which in their mind completely invalidates the existence of God. They think, well, everything just came about by there was nothing. There was absolutely nothing, and then there was a massive explosion, and everything fell into place in just the right way, that we're all here. And the proof of that is that we're all here. If it hadn't been like that, then how can we be here? This is actually the latest theory of one professor by the name of Stephen Hawking. In response to the very valid question of, according to the scientists at their present level of highly developed speculation, it is actually. Their theories are extremely complex, and you have to be very intelligent to even be able to get educated enough to even begin to understand them. So there are various what they call constants within the universe, which they all have to be exactly correct for life, according to their theory, to exist as we perceive it to exist. And all of these constants, they are what are called very fine-tuned, which does suggest there's a tuner. But they say, well, let's get rid of it. So there is Planck's constant and the weak force and the gravitational pull, and every one of them, they if they're not exactly correct down to maybe several thousand decimal points, then life as we know it on Earth cannot come into being. Well, we say it couldn't come into being by your theory anyway. But so the possibility of even one, for a start, how this nothing exploded into everything, that's called a singularity, which is their way of saying that, well, it just happened and we can't explain it, but we think it happened. We're sure it happened. So, and then all these various constants came out. Now, even one of them to come into being by a random interaction of natural forces, is the probability is practically zero. And then when all of them have to be, if you have two of them that have to be exactly fine-tuned, then the probability becomes far, far less. And for 20 or so of them, it's ridiculous. It's just the idea that it could come into being by natural force, just some coincidental force, it's ridiculous. But they're convinced it happened. And Stephen Hawking, his idea, it's the anthropic principle. In other words, the idea is that, well, we're here, so it must have been like that. It just happened. So, Maya is so powerful that they're really convinced. And when you get someone coming on YouTube, and he talks all these things, and he has a big reputation as a scientist. And people, oh, must be right. Without thinking. So even though they're very intelligent, in some way have to say, in some ways they are very intelligent, but their intelligence is working in such a way that they can't see the obvious. They're so fixated on the idea that there should be no God that their intelligence works in such a way that, as far as they're concerned, or they think there is no God. Of course, you can't blame them too much if you think that God's that nasty old guy who chucks everyone into hell forever. But, it's what do you choose? Either you choose atheism or burn in hell forever, ism. So really, the Western world, by the power of Kali Yuga, it's very prominent in the might is right civilization. But really, it's very, very deep ignorance. Very, very deep ignorance. But it looks impressive. I mean, those of you who live in Manchester probably don't think that it looks very impressive. And probably this area is not the most impressive also. But for people coming from other countries, they think, oh, it looks all very impressive. And when you hear all these scientists talking, you say, oh, they really know what they're talking about. And in many ways they may do, but their conclusion is horribly wrong. So, in brief, that's the Maya Pratyajnana. And then the Asuram Bhavamashana, those who are just completely out and out, they have no inclination to anything really. The mudhas, they're the people who don't have any inclination toward religious life. They're apathetic. Or if you push them a bit more, they might be agnostic. And if you push them a bit more, they'll be atheist. And then you get the anti-theist. Those who, they do not at all like, they're against Krishna consciousness. They argue, they make a point of arguing, there's no God. Stop believing in God. It's very bad to believe in God. And some of their arguments are good, in as much as the effect of the misconstrued theism that has dominated the Western world for the last 1700 years or so, it's not very difficult to point out many of the problems that it's caused. So, they've got a point there. But their propaganda that there's nothing spiritual life, and again, it's foolishness. And why should they bother? Why should they be bothered if, according to their theory, life, or it's just we live, we die, finished? Then why are they so bothered about anything? Why should they be so bothered to propagate atheism? Because what does it matter? Just our life is boom, finished. And what does it matter? Why are you bothered? According to their theory, there's no intrinsic difference between a table and a human being. So it's all just a different combination of chemicals. So why atheistic propaganda? Because they're against God. Such persons, they're called Asuram Bhavamashita. They've reposed their intelligence, their hopes, their whole being in an atheistic, anti-theistic outlook. So these are some points that those who have the good fortune and the good intelligence to be theistic, they should understand. This is spoken by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. And Srila Prabhupada, who is the representative of, or the prominent representative of Krishna in the modern age, he also stressed the importance of this. And because I was asked to speak on speaking strongly, then I spoke on this, and we should understand this very clearly. It's better not to take Krishna consciousness in a manner only looking for the nectar. Krishna is all nectar. Krishna, one of his name is Amrita, which means no death, and it also means that which is very nectarian, very sweet. He is all sweet. Madhuradipater akhilam madhuram. Everything about him who is the Lord of all sweetness is very sweet. But that Lord of sweetness also teaches us, for our benefit, about those whose outlook is not very sweet, so that we can discriminate between what should be done and what should not be done, so for our own benefit and so that we don't get misled by these duskritis, performers of bad activities, who are classified in four main categories. Murha, very foolish, just work with no interest in spiritual life. Then Naradhama, those who are the lowest of mankind, the Maya Aparitagana, who may be very knowledgeable, very intelligent, but their real intelligence, which should be seeking after the real purpose of life, that's not awakened at all. And the Asuram Bhavam Ashrita, those who are out and out demons, who are just blatantly and actively atheistic. We can know who such persons are and not be misled by them. So that's also an important part of Krishna consciousness. As Srila Prabhupada said, this verse is very important. Hare Krishna. Is there any question about this, please? Yes, please.
So which one is the easiest one to preach? Obviously, my own thing would be the heart of atheist would be the most difficult one to get through. But then I'm thinking, well, maybe it doesn't work as simply as that.
Which one is the easiest one to preach to? May I ask why you're particularly interested in that? In case you come across them yourself, I see. Yeah, you come across them. Well, in the Bhagavatam, there is the description of the Madhyamadhikari, who is meant for preaching, the Uttam Bhagavat. He simply sees everyone as a devotee, therefore he doesn't preach. The Kanishta Adhikari devotee, or the Niyaf. The Uttam, the highest devotee, he sees everyone except himself as a devotee, therefore he doesn't preach. The lowest kind of devotee sees himself only as a devotee and others not even worth thinking about, and therefore he doesn't preach. And the Madhyamadhikari, his attitude is he sees Ishvare tad adhineshu. Ishvare tadatineshu balisheshu dvishatshu cha prema maitri kripo peksha yakaroti samadhyama. He sees there is the Supreme Lord and he offers his love to the Supreme Lord. He sees that there are devotees of the Supreme Lord and he befriends the devotees. He sees that there are persons who are innocent like children and he preaches to them. And he sees that there are persons who are angry, defiant of Krishna, and he avoids them. So those who are very much atheistic, generally we don't preach to them. We preach to people, or we try to bring in people who are at least somewhat inclined and ready to hear about Krishna consciousness. Of course, it's also necessary to tangle with the out-and-out atheists who are misleading people. We don't really expect to bring them around, but as far as bringing people into Krishna consciousness, many people, they're duskriti or badly behaved, but they're workable. They're misled. And these categories may be overlapping also. Yes, please. What do you mean? Well, I believe you're getting mixed up with a statement in the Nectar of Devotion, which states that if someone blasphemes, you should either cut out their tongue, leave the place, or defeat them. Then you can tell that you should, if you want to discuss, you discuss, but you have to listen also. I'm not exactly sure of what you're talking about, but for instance, there always used to be hardline Christians who they just waste your time. So practically, it's not worth to waste time with them. And people, you may say, well, other people gather around, but most people, they also don't take these people very seriously. So you can just tell them, say, look, you know, I just don't want to waste my time with you, that's all. Or just say amen to them, God bless, and leave them alone, that's all. Or you can tell, if the people are gathered around, say, just say, look, you can just give them a short line and leave it with them, say, look, I don't accept your idea of God who just burns everyone in hell forever. If that's what you want to believe, believe it, but just leave me alone. And you'll probably get public sympathy from that. Yeah, street preaching is it's a great challenge. Srila Prabhupada emphasized very much on the distribution of his books. There's a good opportunity tomorrow at the Rath Yatra because at such festivals of this Hainam parties, then often people, they're more inclined to take our literature. Their interest is awakened. So that's a good opportunity. Are we distributing Bhagavad Gita as it is? I saw in a couple of centers that it seemed the main one for distribution was by Rancho Prabhu, some in addition to Bhagavad Gita. But I'm not saying anything bad against that, but we should emphasize Bhagavad Gita as it is. Oh, I saw it. Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm not saying anything. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but we should emphasize the distribution of Srila Prabhupada. At a program I was at recently, I asked for Bhagavad Gita to distribute to someone. The only one they had there was that one. Which I'm not saying anything, but I had a quick look at it. But it's mostly just the shlokas, and then people they need Prabhupada's explanations to help them to understand it. It's a great challenge to preach, but it's a great opportunity to get a lot of mercy also. And Manchester is an important city in Britain, which is an important country in the world. So it's a good opportunity to preach here. I never spent any time here. Before I joined the movement, I traveled around England a lot, and after joining the movement, I did also. But I only came to Manchester once. That must have been Anyway, sometime in the mid-70s, it was on New Year's Eve, distributing books. I always got the impression of a very frustrated kind of place, more than other parts of England. It's a generally quite frustrated, quite a country in general, but you get the impression of a very working class kind of ethos and people and maybe it's because of the reputation of the factories of Lancashire and then the football hooligans and this and that. The football hooligans, they like Harinam. Oh, I see, that's good. Things are getting better. I was here in the 1970s before I absconded to India. And it was really tough. We used to get arrested all the time, but people, seems they're much more open to us now. So, yeah, well, people, the best, Jagannath brings out the best in people. But sometimes you get the Christians also coming and saying, burn in hell and all this kind of thing. Yeah, they are getting less. Yeah. Yeah, people don't like them, in general.
Actually, I just sense that Muslims have a table every week.
Selling or giving? They give away books. Muslims never sell books, as far as I know. Naradhama. Not Naradhama, Naradhama. Yeah, it's a big challenge. That means we're also coming from the background of Naradhama. That's Kali Yuga. But there's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy also. Dino hino joto chilo hariname udharilo. Those who are all very fallen, they were lifted up by the holy name. So, great difficulty and great opportunity also.
So it's not a waste of time?
Waste of time? No waste of time in Krishna consciousness. Everything else is a waste of time. Even if it seems that our preaching isn't having an effect. Well, it is having an effect. And we can see that. Just the fact that people are more favorable, much more than they were a generation ago, means that some effect is there. It's incremental, but it's cumulative also. It does have its effect. Do you have children here? I see. See children. So you don't see them growing up? No, you don't see them growing up. But others who come after you see, if someone sees your child after 1 year, they'll see them grow. You don't see them growing. Because it's just going on slowly, 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 slowly. You don't notice. Others notice. Then, anything else? In the face of the difficulty that everyone is Naradhama, what should be our attitude? Our attitude should be that He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namaste. Krishna is an ocean of mercy and He's the friend of the most fallen. So we can think that, O Krishna, I'm the most fallen, You be merciful to me and help me to be an instrument in helping all these Naradhamas. Mayavadis, yeah. Generally, we could put them in the Maya Aparita Jnana. Learned, but they missed the point. And some of them also, that Asuram Bhava Masha, that also, if they're against Krishna consciousness, if they're vehemently against Krishna consciousness, then they're also classified like that. Did you want to say something? No. There are 8,400,000 species of life, among which 400,000 are human. Yeah, then? Evolutionary process means, according to our activities in the human life, we get a next life. So, for instance, if one performs sinful activities in this life and one has to go to a lower life form, one may have to go through many life forms and then come to the human life. So it's evolution in that way. But the idea that my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great go back a few times grandfather was a baboon, that's not accepted in the Vedic understanding. Life is a gift. They tell you that life is a gift. Well, who is it a gift to? But it's a gift to who? Life is a gift. Who is it a gift to? We are alive. So who is the gift of life given to? The idea that life is a gift that seems to presuppose that actually we're just matter. And we've been given life. But that it's a misunderstanding to say that life is a gift. We are living beings. We are eternally living beings. If you say life is a gift, then it presumes that life and being are separate. So we should first of all understand what is life. Our very nature is that we are living. We are called jiva. Jiva means living. So when we say other religions say this and that, it's actually not a very good approach. The approach should be what is the actual fact, rather than this religion says this. So many people say so many things, but what is the actual fact? Just like people often tell us, well, what do you believe? Often I'm asked, what do you believe? And my standard response to that is that I say, it doesn't matter what I believe, because I'm a very tiny little being. But we should understand what is the fact. If I believe there's God and there's no God, then my belief in God won't make God exist. And if I don't believe in God and there is God, then my non-belief won't make Him non-exist. So we should understand what is the fact. It's not a question. Belief is a very weak platform. The Vedic understanding doesn't say that we should just believe. But we should understand. Atato Brahma Jignyasa, we should inquire into the nature of reality. Bhagavad Gita is quite different to this Bible or Quran in which they say you just believe it. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, his whole approach is that Arjuna should understand it. It's a completely different approach. So we're not much concerned with this religion says this, that religion says that. We want to understand what is the truth, what is reality, not what different people believe. You believe that no one can find the truth. You believe it. And that's the truth. That's the truth. You believe that no one can know the truth. Do you believe that statement is true? But wait a minute, you said that you believe that no one can know the truth, but do you believe that that statement you said is true? It's hard to tell. So in other words, you don't give much importance on your own statement. If you say that you don't believe that anyone can know the truth, if you really believe that, which you just said you did, then that you believe that your statement is true, which is self-defeating. That means you think it's true that no one can know the truth. So you think that you know the truth, but no one else can know it. You can think whatever you like, but it has no relevance whatsoever. Because you are not the truth. You are not the arbitrator of truth. So you can believe whatever you like. But the truth is not subject to what you or I or anyone else believes. I suggest that you do less thinking. And just try to understand what is the truth. And understand that you don't know what is the truth. And try to find out the process for understanding the truth. That you don't understand the truth, and many others don't understand the truth, doesn't mean that no one understands the truth. There are people who understand the truth. Here in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Manushanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhye. Out of many thousands among people, very few try to understand the truth. So, that very few people understand the truth doesn't mean that no one understands. If you really want to understand what is the truth, then you have to be very serious. And the truth will set you free. Krishna will help you and guide you if you're serious to understand the truth. Then you can find that guidance by which you can understand the truth. But if you take at the outside as a fact, you just decide in your own mind that no one can know the truth, then you're cheating yourself from the very beginning. You'll never know the truth because you've already decided that it's not possible to know. But you're saying from your perspective, but madam, if you don't mind, your perspective is of no value whatsoever. What do you mean by a scientific point of view? What do you mean scientific point of view? There are so many different scientists, they have different opinions on almost everything. What do you mean by a scientific point of view? Yes, why don't you go and tell them? They can't find it, exactly. They're doing the wrong process. They have the wrong attitude from the very beginning. Yeah, yeah. It's right here, actually. I read it out. Maybe you missed the beginning. We read it out at the very beginning. I suggest you read this Bhagavad Gita as it is. I'm just suggesting. You don't have to. It's up to you. But if you want to find the truth that the scientists will never find because their attitude and their methodology from the very, very beginning means they'll never find the truth, then you can find it in this Bhagavad Gita as it is. Actually, the scientific method is self-defeating, and it's what they call scientific method is not at all scientific because they presume as an axiom at the outset that there is nothing to be known beyond that which they can perceive and on the basis of their perception which they can conceive. In other words, they don't believe in anything which they call supernatural. But why not? And actually they're not at all scientific. Just like, for instance, there is tremendous evidence of reincarnation. There's tremendous evidence of ghosts. We're not interested in ghosts, but I'm just giving it as an example. But they won't even begin to consider this in a scientific way because they are convinced that there is nothing beyond gross matter. That's not scientific at all. They presume that they can know everything simply by studying matter. Why? Why should they presume that they can know everything by studying matter? It's not a scientific approach. It's a dogmatically materialistic approach. Materialistic in the sense, the philosophy of materialism presumes that there is nothing beyond matter. So why? Why should they presume? Why should they presume that they can know everything simply by studying matter? It's the whole enterprise from the very beginning is foolish and arrogant. And it rejects the wisdom of all the actually spiritually knowledgeable people throughout the ages. Yeah. Which one?
Orange juice.
Orange juice gives you cancer. Orange juice gives you cancer. But you know what? If you don't drink orange juice, you still have to die. They miss that. They miss that point altogether. If you want to know the truth, you can know it. But you have to be serious. You can't go on in life in a very whimsical and flippant way. It requires discipline. It requires seriousness, commitment. All these things are required. It means submission to a higher authority. So most people in the name of, if they're not grossly atheistic, they may be what they call spiritual. But their so-called spiritualism is just another bluff. They don't want to commit themselves or accept any discipline or authority. That is required. Training is required. Hare Krishna. You have a question? We're going on and on. Encourage you to celebrate Rath Yatra? Yeah, great. Do it. Ask for Jagannath's mercy. How to make people pious so they can accept Krishna consciousness. Well, Rath Yatra festival, this is the kind of, we don't expect everyone just to bow down on the street immediately, but
just by seeing,
yeah. What is that? Rate tu vamanang drishtva punarajanma navidyate. That is stated that by seeing the Lord on his chariot, you don't get born again. So, that's a great benediction.
Yeah.
Well, that we already discussed, that there is progress, right? There is progress from one generation to the next. I left England a generation ago, and Krishna consciousness is, at least many people are much more open to accept it than they were previously. So there is good hope. But I'm not going to speak about the Sukritinaha now, because that's another whole lecture. Because I was asked to speak on speaking strongly, I spoke on this. If I'd been asked to speak on Chaturvidha Bhajante Mang Jana Sukritina Arjuna, then I might have spoken on that. But I was asked to speak on this, so I did. So if I've upset or offended anyone in doing so, please forgive me. Hare Krishna. Yeah, I was asked to speak on this, I guess, because the last book that I released was called On Speaking Strongly in Srila Prabhupada's Service. So there's a whole manual about it. Why we should, how we should, who is qualified to do so, the results of doing, the results of not doing, it's all analyzed in this book. And I've written other books on Srila Prabhupada's orders. I encourage you all to read Bhagavad Gita as it is and all of Srila Prabhupada's books again and again and again. But as Srila Prabhupada told me, and he actually said that all sannyasis should make some literary contribution, so you have to find some time to read other books also. Okay, all right, there are some lecture CDs of mine. If anyone wants to listen to them, again, you're very much encouraged to listen to all of Srila Prabhupada's lectures. And if you like, you can listen to this also. Then, what else have you got? You can. There's DVDs of lectures. In Hindi, there are some Hindi lectures also. Hindi, Russian, different. Ruski, yeah, okay. Then what else? Other books are there. Beginner's Guide to Krishna Consciousness. What to do if you want to get going in Krishna consciousness, all the things to do. Ramayana. We should know. That came up in the class, how the guardians have to instruct their children. So this is a very good medium to instruct your children in Krishna consciousness, or specifically this way, Rama consciousness, and all the values of Vedic culture you can get in a form that they'll be addicted to. And then about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all those who are coming to Krishna consciousness via Srila Prabhupada, they should know who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is a Reader's Digest version of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. Brahmacharya and Krishna consciousness, for those, for devotees, male, female, in all statuses of life who want to practice Krishna consciousness very seriously, this book will give some guidance. What else we got there? Vanshidas Babaji and Rasikananda, these are biographies of great devotees in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They give us some inspiration and blessings. What else have we got? Jai Srila Prabhupada. This is glorification of Srila Prabhupada. If you love to hear about Srila Prabhupada, you'll like this. My Memories of Srila Prabhupada, do we have also? Is that finished? What other books are there? Glimpses, we're out of stock. Pilgrimage, we have stock or not? Several of the books are not in stock. Oh, yeah. Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava. If you've read all of Srila Prabhupada's books, you can read this also. That's a biography and teachings of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, 3 volumes. It's heavy in all ways. 3 volumes is physically heavy, and the philosophy is heavy, and the language is not that easy, but it's It's quite an experience to write it, and it's quite an experience to read it also. If you haven't read all of Srila Prabhupada's books, you can take it and keep it for when you have. So that's all. Are there any other books there? Well, anyway, you can look and see. If anyone would like to take the books, please do. Please encourage me in my service to Srila Prabhupada. And you can also get more knowledge in Krishna consciousness. And if anyone would like to take the books, I can sign them also. Thank you very much for coming. I'm looking forward to seeing you all tomorrow. Jai Jagannath!
Jai.